Welcome to Podcast Ed, the podcast of RedefinedOnline.org, covering the stories behind the new definition of public education. On this episode, Step Up for Students President Doug Tuthill sits down with civil rights and ed choice icon Reverend H.K. Matthews. Reverend Matthews was one of the hundreds of people savagely beaten at the Edmund Pettus Bridge on March 7, 1965. Bloody Sunday, one of the most infamous days in civil rights history. The Reverend discusses protesting with recently deceased Congressman John Lewis and dovetails into his life in education, fighting for desegregation and creating freedom schools all over the South. Listen to more of Reverend Matthews' story in Doug's introduction next. Thank you for listening and enjoy the episode.
We're pleased today to have Reverend H.K. Matthews with us. Reverend H.K. Matthews is a legend in Florida as part of the civil rights movement and is a big advocate for education choice. A little bit of background on Reverend Matthews. He was born in 1928 in Alabama, moved to Pensacola, Florida in 1955, where he became involved in church activities. In 1961, he was ordained minister, part of the AME Zion Church, and became very active in the civil rights movement. He marched in the Edmund Pettus Bridge on March 7, 1965. Along with John Lewis and about 500 others, they were beaten savagely by police. Reverend Matthews also founded the NAACP Youth Chapter in Pensacola, as well as the SCLC, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, which is Dr. King's organization. Reverend Matthews was arrested 32 times and spent two stints in the state penitentiary. A champion of youth, a champion of justice, a champion of freedom, Reverend H.K. Matthews. Start with John Lewis. I know that you guys were on the bridge together in March 7th, 1965, but talk about your relationship with John Lewis. Talk about how you saw him in the civil rights movement. Just give the listeners a little sense of who John Lewis was and what you knew about him and what you saw in his actions.
Well, first of all, when you mention civil rights, I mean, you can't mention that without mentioning John Lewis. Who was an integral part of the civil rights movement. John Lewis came into the movement as a very, very young fellow. His first contact with Dr. King was that when he was a 15-year-old teenager, he wrote Dr. King a letter about things that were going on in the movement or things that he thought should go on in the movement. But anyway, 10 years beyond that, 10 years later, after he had written that letter, was when we launched that march from Selma to Montgomery, with John Lewis being in the forefront. John Lewis, Jose Williams, and several others of the national leaders, most of them who are gone now, were in the forefront of that march. I, fortunately, was in the middle of the march, so my severe blows were not as severe as those of people like John. But John was in the forefront. And I think the reason that John Lewis stands out to a lot of people is that he was the youngest person who was in leadership role on that march. He was 25 years old when we staged that, attempted to cross that Edmund Pettus Bridge on that fateful day of March 7th, 1965, which has been, 55 years ago. Again, John was a very young fellow, but he's a very enthusiastic person. John was a member of an organization called SNCC, Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. So it's difficult, and of course, his passing, and I'm fast-forwarding and getting ahead of myself a bit, his passing has left a big void in the leadership for civil. He was not just a person who was fighting for the rights of black people, but he was a human rights leader. John was a person who cared about everybody. John was a strong leader, even in his waning years. John still stood out as a strong leader who garnered the respect of people on both sides of the aisle. You know, it's not a matter of how much people like you, but it is a matter of how people respect you and how they see you as a human being. John was never one who was looking for publicity. seeking out the media, looking for the cameras. John was just John.
You guys knew when you marched on that bridge on March 7, 1965, that you were walking into trouble. And John Lewis at the front of that march knew that his life was in danger. What were you all thinking? What goes on a person's mind who does that, that walks into the face of brutality like that? What's that like, and what are you thinking when that happens?
I knew that they would try and stop us, or at least would stop us. But actually, had I known that we were going to run into what we ran into, I've had some serious thoughts about whether or not I would have gone on that march. I wasn't one who wanted to get whooped and beat. And so I'm not so sure how I would have reacted, but thanks be to God, we did not know what we were going to encounter. So with that being said, we went with the intention. We knew that they were going to try and stop us or would stop us, but we didn't know to the extent that they would go to stop us. So it was kind of a jovial thing when we first started out. There were over 500 people on that bridge. When they, Mr. McLeod, I think that was his name during that time, it's been 55 years ago, and I'm 92 years old, so it's kind of hard to remember like it was yesterday. John Lewis and Jose Williams, and there were a lot of other people on the front line who basically said to them, we ain't going back. You know, we set out to march across this bridge, and that's what we plan to do. They proceeded to go, and of course, as we proceeded to go, they proceeded to come. They come toward us with the billy whip clubs, the horses, tear gas, and they were beating people indiscriminately. John is not the only person, and nobody ever put a claim to that, who was beaten on that bridge. But John was the one who, I think, and I think history reflects, took the most blows and was beaten more severely than anybody. He had a fractured skull. And, of course, I think Miss Amelia Boynton, who was even behind me in the march, they beat her unmercifully also. And she was cowering down trying to protect herself. And but John, again, was looked upon and has been looked upon by those of us in the movement and those who are without the movement as the sacrificial lamb on that march. A lot of people get confused. They say that I marched with Dr. King on the Edmund Pettus Bridge on Bloody Sunday. Dr. King was not on that bridge on Bloody Sunday. He had to go back to Atlanta, go someplace for another reason. And he returned that following week, and he was on the bridge that Sunday, the following Sunday, March 14th, when the march was successful, when they did go into Montgomery. However, I was not on that one. I was back in Pensacola and glad to be.
Glad to be safe, I'm sure. Let's talk a little bit about your transition into education, particularly because you've been a great champion of education choice now for a long, long time. You really got activated working with Escambia High School. That was a school that had a Confederate flag and other kinds of racist symbols at the Escambia High School. I think you were arrested trying to eliminate some of that racist symbolism at the school and some of the ways that kids were being treated. Talk a little bit about the work that you did at Escambia High School. And then I think you guys pulled some of the black students out of that school because how they were being treated. And you created something called Freedom Schools, which had a long history through the South where people had organized freedom schools for black children so they could get a good education. But just give me a sense of what happened at Escambia High School and how that got you really deeply involved in education, including education choice, which is what a freedom school was.
Escambia High School was a hotbed of racism. It was out in Myrtle Grove. And their mascot was Johnny Reb. The flag they flew, the rebel flag, the Confederate flag, as people choose to call it. The black students who integrated that school initially, they were not met with kindness. That school was the school of the white folk, as we termed it. It really came to a head when we tried to get the school to remove those symbols, and they refused. And one day they started rioting at the school, and the principal called for me to come out to the school because he knew that I had a handle on the black young people in Escambia County and in Pensacola in particular. So he called for me to come out there try and get the black students calmed down, who was not the one who was doing, who was being riotous and carrying on. But I guess he called for me to come out there to try and calm the black students down for their protection. But when I got to the campus, I was taken to the principal's office, and the white parents, a lot of them, were trying to break the door down to the principal's office to get in there to me. Again, I was like John Lewis. I was getting into good trouble. So didn't succeed, but the principal did take me out into that atmosphere to take me down on the courtyard where they were loading the black students on a bus. When they saw me, they started running toward me and saying, "Reverend Matthews, they're going to take us to jail." Well, the principal leaned over and said to me, we were standing side by side, he said, they're not going to jail. The bus is going to take them home. So based on that, I got the megaphone from one of the deputies, and I stood on the steps of the bus, and I said, "Let me have your attention. Nobody is going to jail." I said that on the strength of what the principal had said to me. And when I said that, the deputies moved in and arrested me. That was my first experience in facing a felony. I had had a whole lot of trumped up misdemeanor charges, I guess, that never went any place. But this one, they moved in and arrested me, and they took me and quite a few students to jail, and down to the jail out in the courtyard, including Sue Strawn, who is an anchor at WEAR television now. She was a student at Escambia High School at that time. And they took us all down to the jail. We were out in the courtyard. They didn't put us in cells. They just had us out in the courtyard milling around while they tried to figure out what they were going to charge us with, because they had to come up with something. They allowed me to sign my bond and then sign the bond of all the other students. If you're arrested on a felony, you're going to let somebody out of jail right then and let him sign the bond of all the other people who were accompanying you on that felonious act? I don't think so. But that was my first felony charge. But when we went to court, the deputies could not get their lies together. They were out in the hall saying, "He said this," and no, they were arguing with each other. "No, this is what he said." So consequently, the all-white jury acquitted me. From that point, we established, might be getting some things out of sequence, but we established freedom schools throughout Escambia County. And of course, later on, I had freedom schools down in Chipley, Florida, down in Defuniac Springs, Florida. You know, I just kind of branched out and had freedom schools everywhere where black students were not being treated fairly. Because my first experience was not at Escambia High, but was at Pensacola High, when the students wanted to have a black history program, and they refused. I was working then at the Florida State Employment Service, and I pulled all of the black students out of class and set them on the lawn and didn't allow them to go back in class until they told them they would not go back. And they listened to me then. Young people were in listening modes then, a little bit different than a lot of them are now. They would not go back into the classroom until they agreed to have a Black History program. And of course, they did have one, and I was the speaker at the first Black History program at PHS. But that's, you know, kind of a synopsis of what my educational involvement has been, because I think one of the most important things that we did was to establish those freedom schools. And that was for the purpose of having students out of school, thereby crippling the financial aspect of the schools, because they were funded based on attendance. So we pulled black students out of class all over the county, and had retired teachers, black teachers, to come in. We established those freedom schools in various churches throughout Escambia County. My first introduction to Step Up for Students, I'd never heard about it, didn't know anything about it, but I always knew that we needed to have freedom of choice, which is why we marched across the Edmund Pettus Bridge to give us freedom to vote, which is why we did a lot of things, sat in at lunch counters and all that kind of stuff, to have freedom of choice to do as we wanted to do, as allowed to us by the Declaration of Independence, by the Constitution. That was my first experience of dealing with schools in that sense, but because we were just dealing with things overall. But my first introduction to school choice, or Step Up for Students, was in 2007, that Charlie Crist hosted was the chairperson, former Governor Charlie Crist, was the co-chairperson of an event, commemorative event that they had for me at PJC, and which is now PSC, that John Kirtley attended. And I got a chance to meet John Kirtley on that night. He introduced me to Step Up for Students, and it's an introduction that I will cherish all of my life, because John has certainly been a friend, and he is a champion. And so when we get into the school business, John Kirtley is another John Lewis.
Well, that's I'm sure John Kirtley will be deeply moved by that comparison and humbled. So today we're fighting to continue to have basically more freedom schools, more kids having more choices. Are you optimistic? There's a lot of change going on right now. We certainly have a pandemic, but there's been this protest all over the country related to police violence. What's your sense of where we are today, and where you think things are going to be going soon?
Well, my sense of things today is that we have retrogressed as a people, as a black people, we retrogressed. A lot of it is our fault, because we became complacent and allowed ourselves to go in a backward mode. You know, I still see light at the end of the tunnel. I don't think any tunnel, regardless of how long, is unending. And for the things that that John Kirtley is doing, and so many other people with AFC, and people like yourself, and people, well, you know, you're still, in spite of the pandemic, I think I'm more optimistic now than I was prior to the pandemic, because I just feel that that people, a lot of people in high places, are more determined now to see to it that our children receive a quality education. And my favorite saying always is that one size does not fit all. And so people are leaning toward sending their children to a school that they've always leaned this way, hopefully, that will be beneficial to them and not to the system. Hence, Step Up for Students, hence American Federation for Children, hence all of these, the charter schools and all of that. We've marched in Tallahassee. We've marched following in the footsteps of John Kirtley and others in leadership roles. I've been all over the country talking about school choice. I know what it is to have to be relegated to a school based on your color. I know what it is to be relegated to a school, at least I have some knowledge, to be relegated to a school based on your zip code and based on your income. This movement of ours, and I call it ours because I feel that I'm a part of it, is giving parents an opportunity to send their children to a school of their choice. I've never tried to put forth the fact that that all public schools are bad and all charter schools are good, because there's some bad in all of them and there's some good in all of them. At least if you got a choice, the results of that choice belong to you. You have ownership of it. So I'm pro school choice. I'm not anti-public education, but I am pro-school choice. And those persons who claim that those of us who are pro-school choice and who advocate for our program of being the public school system of funds, to me, they are in error, because we're funded by so many different entities. So I'm just not sure that I don't buy into that at all. But I do think that we ought to have the right. You know, we've got so many success stories from this movement, from this school choice business. We've got all kind of success stories all over the country. I'm a strong advocate, and I've made some people not too pleased. Some friends of mine who are public school teachers and, you know, school board members, but I made them quite angry with me. I apologized to them, not for what I was doing, but for them being angry. I didn't have anything to apologize for. So I think I see a bright future for our movement and our program. In spite of the pandemic, or maybe because of it, I see a bright future.
You have been fighting for freedom and for justice for decades, and many of us have been inspired and continue to be inspired by your work. And I want to say thank you on behalf of hundreds of thousands of families and children who you have helped and whose lives have been made better because of the efforts that you've made.